Thanks for that introduction. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all about this topic that's near and dear to my heart. I should mention my work with Public Health Ontario is ironically more on communicable disease policy and outbreak preparedness. But I've always loved chronic disease and the built environment, and it's an area that I'm hoping to stay at least somewhat involved in. So this project is one part of it. Myself and my presenter, Dongsae Kim, who's an urban designer based in South Korea, neither of us have any disclosures to report. So the focus of this talk is going to be to talk a little bit about the active design guidelines, and I'm sure all of you who work in the built environment and health are familiar with various different active design guidelines, and with respect to actually identifying in terms of our professional perceptions how relevant they are to suburban forms. And interestingly enough, we're also curious about once we've gotten past the perception part, how do we actually make active design guidelines more relevant for healthy built environment planning in suburban settings? So, really quickly, this talk is actually a pilot comparison study. It's basically myself and Dongsae's attempt to develop a framework by which we can evaluate active design guidelines for suburban relevance. And our future direction is actually to maybe, to finalize the framework, to actually see how it goes, and then obtain responses from various other folks in the discipline just to see how the framework actually gets applied. So this is a report of our developing of the framework that we use to analyze active design guidelines. So why active design guidelines? As I mentioned, there's growing interest in public health as well as in urban design and planning that built environment affects all sorts of things in terms of health promoting as well as health outcomes. And we know that globalization is increasing urbanization rather is increasing globally, and that probably I think the UN report said something like by 2030, 70% of people are going to be living in cities, which basically means this is more important than ever about the question of how do our cities and our urban environments affect our health. And because active design guidelines reflect the interest in urban design and planning and health to make healthier communities, they're increasingly being adopted by a lot of different cities and urban areas. And why suburbs? So I grew up in a suburb, and I've always had a fascination as to back growing up in the suburbs, I had a choice between taking a bus that came every 45 to 60 minutes to get to school or when I was in university, or driving to the university and then spending 25 minutes looking for parking, or walking an hour and a half. It's always a challenge to figure out what's the best modality for transport there, and that's where all my interest was. But we all know that actually a majority of Americans live in suburban settings. The same is actually true in Canada as well. But I couldn't find a reference for that, so that's why I didn't put that in there. but specifically, the idea that suburban development has basically been the general trend of development since the 1970s, 1980s, or even way back to just after post-World War II settings where you had the development of prototypical suburbs such as Levittown and all these other things. They've essentially been growing, but really exploded in the last 30 years. And we've also seen some increasing evidence that suggests that living in suburban settings is associated with rates of chronic disease as well as non-communicable disease, just by virtue of the lifestyle. So that's why we're kind of interested in it, is that you've got active design guidelines that are coming out talking about built environment. You've got these suburbs that are sort of where the majority of folks live. And so the research question that we had was, how relevant are currently proposed active design guidelines to suburban settings? And basically, this is meant to assess perceptions from our two disciplines, basically urban design as well as public health and public health medicine. And then the secondary question was, we basically looked at retrofit and future growth. So the idea being that, assuming that they are relevant, or ignoring the question of relevance, how easily could current active design guidelines be implemented to existing suburbs? And then for the future, how easily and important would it be for current active design guidelines to be applied to the development of future of suburbs in the future, knowing that this development is still very much ongoing? So basically, like I said, we've got two perspectives here, myself lending a public health physician perspective and Dongsae lending the architect slash urban designer perspective. The way we developed the framework is we basically reviewed the three different ADGs from New York, Toronto, and Melbourne. And we chose those cities because those are the cities that we've actually worked in and actually have a familiarity with the active design guidelines, but we'd probably want to integrate more into a future framework. And we basically developed this giant summary table, which had all the different ADGs divided into subcategories and trying to link it to whichever city. So it would essentially be like this specific active design guideline was mentioned in New York, in Toronto. This one was mentioned in all three, that kind of thing. And then basically we went back and independently ranked just on a 1 to 5 scale to rank our perception about how relevant and the retrofit and future growth questions that I had just shown you. And then basically we came back and compared our answers. And so the way we actually compared our answers was we averaged out our scores and assessed for perceived relevance. Anything greater than or equal to 3, for example, in the relevance question was deemed as relevant to suburbs, at least perceived relevant to suburbs. Less than 3 was deemed not perceived as not relevant. And then we basically had consensus discussions on areas of disagreement, particularly if there was like a major disparity in the scores. And so, as you can tell, this is a pilot study, and we'd love to do this with more folks in the future. And the fortuitous secondary outcome that we designed is that there's actually significant differences in viewpoints between the way physicians look at the question of built environment and health and the way urban designers do. And so it's almost a bit like apples to oranges. And we may be working in the same space, but it seems like we're not necessarily using the same language all the time. Like we see things very differently. And that could just be me and Dongsei, but it's another hypothesis that came out of this pilot that we're interested in engaging and finding out more about. So, the framework developed has 82 total recommendations from 3 cities, and these were divided into the 10 subcategories that were based on the New York NDGs. And the reason we did that is because the New York ADGs were probably seen as the sentinel original active design guidelines. They were pretty much the one that every other urban center or city makes reference to now when they develop their own. And so those were the 10 subcategories. And what we found when we actually looked at our perceived relevance was that 40% of the active design guidelines actually scored less than a 3 between myself and Dongsei. So meaning that pretty much just under half of the active design guidelines were not perceived as relevant to suburban settings by myself and by the as a public health MD and by Dongsei as our urban designer, which is interesting. And when we divided this out into subcategory, we can actually see there were different recommendations in different subcategories that had less relevance, at least perceived less perceived relevance. And some examples, for example, that were like less than 3 ranked. So we looked at street connectivity, and there was a suggestion in all 3 of New York, Toronto, and Melbourne that you should aim for small block sizes and well-connected streets, which obviously in suburban settings is very challenging because most suburban settings are car dependent. They don't necessarily focus on developing in blocks. It's more loops and lollipops like you have in that picture there. So we said, you know, this is not necessarily, this is a challenging and not necessarily relevant active design guideline that can be applied to many existing suburban settings. Other examples, they mentioned curb extensions for congested sidewalks. Obviously that focuses on places like downtown Toronto or midtown Manhattan. Those are key, but in places in suburban settings where, you know, there's a lot more transport modality separation in terms of you've got pathways, you know, often about, and you've got giant 6-lane arterial roads that, you know, many people may not necessarily be walking around, and it's not necessarily congested, also very challenging in terms of perceiving it to be relevant. And the last one was actually the fun one. It was like, Dongsei and I looked at this one, and we said, clearly this one was written in New York City because it would have to be something in Manhattan, or Manhattan or some really dense urban area where it's like maps and signage, and specific signage that says how many calories you burn if you walk to the next bus stop. If you think about the spacing of bus stops in suburban settings, I think you'd be burning a whole ton of calories, and it'd be a pretty funny sign. So that was another example of a guideline that we perceived not to be relevant. And then, so the secondary results, as I mentioned, we were looking at the retrofit and the future development question. So in terms of this, like, you know, how easily could we apply it to existing suburban settings, and how relevant or important is it to future suburban settings? And there was actually large enough differences that we didn't even bother doing averages. We basically just asked the question, why did we get such big differences between the urban designer and the urban design perspective myself? And as we discussed, and basically it was just like, Dongsei and I had a number of discussions. We said, well, how did you rank this so highly? And generally it tended to be that Dongsei was an optimist in the sense that he was always like, this is important and this can be done in suburbs. Whereas I tended to be like, well, you know, I don't see it being done. I don't see how it, you know, can be applied for retrofit, etc. And then we discovered that the reason is probably because of the perspectives of our discipline, or at least this is the hypothesis we have, and we actually want to test this out with more physicians. The hypothesis we have is that myself as an MD, I'm trained to look for a causal pathway. I'm trained to look at something that exists and figure out why it exists, right? So I'm looking more towards the past in terms of, you know, this is bad. So I see the suburbs in, as being static, and then saying, you know, why are these health outcomes related to suburban settings? Whereas Dongsay, by his nature of being an urban designer, and by urban designers being, you know, by their discipline, they have to be thinking about the future. They have to see the city as, you know, dynamic and changing. And so in as much as I'm sitting there as a scientific inquiry saying, this thing is the way it is and it's bad for health. Whereas Dongsay says, these can change. These have, you know, he has a longer time horizon. He realizes that this actually, even though it may not seem relevant now, it may be important in the future. So it was very interesting. And obviously, like I said, we're interested in piloting this with more folks to see if we get that. And I've mentioned that a number of times, and that's our big next step. I think the big thing, the differences of perspective, is what we actually found, ironically, was more relevant than the relevance question, because I think that holds the key to ongoing interdisciplinary conversations between urban designers and urban planners and public health physicians that are working in this space, so that we're all talking the same language and at least trying to share a same common perspective about the work we're trying to do to make suburban settings and urban settings more healthy. So, with that, I guess I'm happy to take questions if there's time. Or, yeah,
thank you.
Are there questions for Lawrence? I have one.
Sure.
Are there other disciplines that you'd like to invite? If you form like a Delphi sort of committee to do the next steps, what other disciplines might you reach out to?
Well, I think the way I would frame this question in my head is you've got other folks involved in the health space and other folks involved in the urban designer space. And specific to me, I mean, I'm a public health physician and I have that perspective, but I think I would definitely want, you know, more, especially given how multidisciplinary public health is, you'd want epidemiologists, you'd want policy folks, you'd want, you know, people who are involved in this from other aspects of public health. And then beyond that, I think the big thing that I had and the big thing that I learned while I was doing this work was that an urban designer and an urban planner aren't the same things. So we would certainly want people from planning agencies and other pieces along those lines. And then broader to communities, you would want to also just look at other stakeholders outside of government and academia as well. So you'd be looking at the private sector and all those other folks. So. Yeah, and no, and that comment is great because that's an example of an active design guideline specific to a suburban setting that we would propose if you're going to come up with, you know, active design guidelines relevant to suburbs, put something in there and say, you know, good train transportation that's within 30 to 40 minutes of you know, a majority of homes. So. Absolutely. The discussion that we had was basically, we actually had a discussion initially before we filled it out and said, what does a suburb look like kind of thing. And then Dongsay and I have actually worked together in a number of different cities. So we said, a specific neighborhood in Ottawa, which is like the Western, we were like, this is a suburb. So when you're thinking of a suburb, you're thinking of this neighborhood in Ottawa, you're thinking of this neighborhood in Melbourne, and you're thinking of this neighborhood in Toronto. So that was it.
Did you have a question?
Sure.
Toronto, and I've known all the cities you've been in, and we've been in all of them this year, but to what extent are you and your co-op familiar with the two cities, both the urban areas and the suburbs?
I've been to all three cities, and I think Dongsay has as well. I've lived most of my life in the Greater Toronto Area, and I spend a lot of time in New York City, just by virtue of being from Toronto, because it feels like everyone in Toronto goes to New York all the time. But I'm obviously less familiar with Melbourne, which is why Melbourne was not one of the one which is why rather Melbourne, the specific suburb that we mentioned that Dongsi and I worked on, was a suburb that he had worked on with me, and then basically sent me a whole bunch of photos and stuff like that. In the future, I think we would definitely want to, we would have to come up, if we were going to administer this in a further pilot, we'd have to come up with an archetypal kind of thing like this. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
I'll be the judge.
Yes, and the reason these three cities were chosen was because we have existing professional relationships with folks at the Department of Health in all three cities, so we're hoping to bring this back to them at some point, once it's more firmed up.
I have one other thing. Sure. Maybe you mentioned it, but you talked about the differences in perspectives between you and Dongsi on future.
Yeah.
But where were the sort of overlap, where were the common places that you really... like even the words that were common to the two disciplines, what were those? What did you find?
To be honest, we didn't necessarily find that many commonalities when it came to talking about the future question. In terms of other areas, I think when we talked about relevance, I feel that difference of perspectives probably really affected all of the aspects of the language and discussion that we actually had. So in terms of the actual words, I don't think we necessarily delved too deeply into detail, but I think that even specific words, we may have probably been perceiving things differently. So. Okay.
Do you have suggestions about how you would talk to architects differently next time? Or
well,
would you change your language?
I think the piece that I would recommend would be to understand that that. And this was a learning opportunity for me, is to understand that, you know, cities are, you know, are ever-changing, complex, you know, things that are not necessarily static. And so I think coming into it with the perspective that things can change and things can get better is probably what I would recommend to any physician at that point. And I don't know what Dongsi is, but maybe he'll understand. He's understood better that we're very interested in the cause and effect question.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lawrence.